welcome to the Bundesliga show. I'm Terry DeFellum. A slight change of format for this week as John Hartley is unable to join me for the podcast. He has work commitments and that's tied him up for the entire week, I'm afraid. Such is life as a freelancer. However, he did have time to record a cracking interview with a special guest, and that's coming up very shortly. After that, we'll have a listen to an interview that I did with top Bundesliga blogger Tim Hill. He gives us a tactical lowdown on the two Ruhr giants and great rivals, Schalke and Borussia Dortmund. But first, let's just get a few things out of the way, quickly summarise the most recent action, starting with the DFB Pokal, the German Cup quarterfinals. There are two second division clubs in the draw for the semi-finals. Energie Cottbus, they followed on from their fantastic victory over Wolfsburg in the last round with another win over Hoffenheim. 1-0 was the final score, and the goal scorer was Xiao Jiayi in the 84th minute. So congratulations to them, and joining them will be Duisburg, another recently fairly ex Bundesliga club. They are in the hat also. They beat Kaiserslautern 2-0. Branimir Bajic and Goran Sukalo, scorers of those two goals, and the toast of Duisburg, I'm sure. The other two clubs in the hat are Bayern Munich, made fairly short work of Alemannia Aachen, 4-0, and Schalke, well, they had to go to extra time to get past Nuremberg, 3-2, the final score there. Other news, well, it's been a bad week for Borussia Dortmund. BVB are still 11 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga table, but they had dropped two against a dogged Stuttgart side at the weekend. Many people feel that Dortmund really were good enough to win that game, but they didn't, crucially. And Progrebniak scored a relatively late equaliser. Then came the news that Shinji Kagawa, a player who's been instrumental in Dortmund's success so far this season, has a broken metatarsal, which he sustained in the Asian Cup. He will be out for a prolonged period and may not return before the end of the season. With Leverkusen and Bayern notching up impressive wins against Kaiserslautern and Borussia Mönchengladbach, respectively, the pressure is beginning to build on Jurgen Klopp's young squad. And indeed, should they suffer any further injuries, shall we say, to Mario Götze or Kevin Grosskreutz, will that lead start to erode? We shall see. On to the rest of the results then that I haven't mentioned. Hamburg beat Eintracht Frankfurt 1-0. Freiburg drew with Nuremberg 1-1. Mainz losing to Wolfsburg at the Bruchweg 1-0. Hannover losing to Schalke. And Hoffenheim getting that 2-2 draw with St. Pauli. Not forgetting, of course, Cologne 3, Werder Bremen 0. Virtuoso performance by Lukas Podolski. Lots of changes at Cologne's, and the Billy Goats were the topic of discussion between John and his guest, Andy James, in an interview which is coming up right after this.
Terry, sorry I couldn't be with you on the show this week, but it would be bad for me not to bring you something for this week's podcast. So joining me on the line from Munich is Andy James, who is a commentator and writes for the league's official website. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. Delighted to be on.
Andy, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for many Bundesliga clubs so far this season, but arguably none more so than Cologne. Like Stuttgart and Hoffenheim, they've had to replace a coach already this campaign. Zvonimir Zoldo departed and Frank Schaefer has taken his place at the Rhein-Energie Stadion. Also, the season has seen the departure of general manager Michael Mayer and the announcement of debts in excess of 20 million euros, so they're not really in great shape. But where did the problems for the Billy Goats start?
Well, a lot of people, a lot of the fans at least, left the blame with the former sporting director or general manager, Michael Mayer, who received the blame due to a number of questionable transfers, expensive transfers, some of which paid off, at least in the eyes of the fans, perhaps statistically not so much. And I'm referring to Lukas Podolski here, who is obviously now the club captain, the darling of the fans, returned from Bayern Munich a couple of years ago to a hero's reception, but he hasn't really knocked the goals in as you might expect from a 10 million euro striker. And a number of other questionable signings under Mayer, which really, I think he's had a bit of a harsh time. He was sacked obviously earlier in the season before Christmas, and they've decided to bring in Volker Finke. The great thing about Volker Finke is his contacts in the game. They stretch all over the world. He's got a great reputation for finding sort of rough diamonds from, with respect, lesser known countries. He was he brought in some Georgians at Freiburg as they hopped between the divisions and really got the best out of them. Hardworking players with no little talent either. My only concern with the dismissal of Meyer and the arrival of Finke is that Finke is not really someone to bring the club forward. I think I know a lot of Köln fans were disappointed that maybe they could have brought in a bigger name. You see the likes of Hamburg trying to bring in Matthias Sammer. That may have been a step too far, but that's the kind of name that the Köln fans wanted to bring in. Someone who is going to attract big names to what is essentially a big club. This is a club who's getting towards 50,000, sometimes more, every week. It's a fantastically supported club. Massive city, a lot of tradition. And while Finke does have a decent track record, for example, where he was with Freiburg for 16, 17 years, but they again were a yo-yo club. And that is exactly what Cologne have been over the last decade as well, a club hopping between the second division and the Bundesliga. And for me, I'm wondering, you know, is it just more of the same with Finke, or is he really someone who can take the club forward and establish them as a club which itself will feel no doubt that they should be challenging for European places?
Well, absolutely. And speaking of his of the transfers, he doesn't start his role until the 1st of February, but there's some influence that has already been evident from Volker Finke in the transfer window. Tomoyaki Makino has already arrived from Japan in the transfer window, and Finke must make the point has been coaching at Aurora Red Diamonds in the J League, so that's an influence there that we can automatically see. And also, there's been the signing of Zlovomir Peshko from Lech Poznan. So he's already making some moves in the transfers. Have we seen any evidence of plus points for Cologne on those signings? Obviously, Makino has been out. He's been ill, so he hasn't played. But Peshko looked pretty good against Bremen, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Peshko is a fine example of the kind of player like the Georgians that Finke had in Freiburg. He's the kind of player who, you know, is lesser known. I don't think any of us had heard of him before he arrived. I certainly hadn't. Comes in from the Polish league, a player with plenty of energy, likes to get at defences. He showed against Werder Bremen in a 3-0 victory, where Köln showed a marked improvement on their performances before Christmas. They were oozing confidence, and Peshko was one of the main protagonists in that display. Certainly in the first half, looked energetic, was getting in behind the defence. He was unlucky with a couple of offside decisions, may have found the target had they gone his way. And yeah, like I say, he looks like a player who perhaps isn't top quality, in the sense of a Podolski, a 10 million signing, but he's the kind of player who certainly they can squeeze the best out of. And I think that's where Finke will show his talents, is plucking these kind of players from the market. Makino, as you say, he was in Japan, he was coaching in Japan, and he'll know the Asian market well. And you know, with a bit of luck, he'll be of similar success to someone like Shinji Kagawa, who's another, you know, not expensive signing who's been brought in and really shone in the Bundesliga. And certainly there's, you know, a lot of hope for Makino to come in and strengthen the defence, which, you know, was a problem before Christmas, though.
Absolutely a problem. They were leaking goals all over the place, weren't they?
Yeah.
Talking about the past for Cologne, I always have a bit of a personal theory that the departure of Christoph Daum was a big blow for Cologne. He got them back into the Bundesliga, and I always had a bit of a vision that he was a vital cog in the machinery before he left for Turkey. Do you think it left a little bit of a void?
Absolutely. Well, obviously Daum had his problems off the field, but he was very much a fan favourite with the club, with the club's fans. He did a great job taking them back into the Bundesliga. He was there for 3 years, begun to build something, and then suddenly went for pastures new with Fenerbahce in Turkey. And really, I think the arrival of Soldo after him was a bit of a stopgap. This wasn't someone with the same kind of standing in the German game, certainly in a managerial sense, as Daum. He was an attacking midfielder for Stuttgart for the best part of a decade, made over 350 appearances for Stuttgart. Came in, tried to give Köln a more attacking vibe to their play. You know, they played a sort of triumvirate with Novakovic and Podolski, the main players there, and it didn't really suit them. I mean, I think what Köln needed is someone with a decent grasp of defensive tactics, which Soldo never really showed. And as we've already mentioned, okay, last year they finished 13th, which was respectable enough, but they shipped an awful amount of goals, and this season that looked to be continuing. And obviously they were bottom of the table for a time, haven't really managed to get out of the bottom three until recently. And I think that's a lot down to Frank Schaefer, who of course replaced Soldo back in October. Now Schaefer is more someone I can see building something and really shaping an era at Köln if he's given the chance, which it does seem like he will be. He was youth coach at the club for many years. He coached the under-23s for the last couple of seasons. He was a player in the youth ranks himself from the age of 10. So this is someone who knows the club inside out. He knows the players. He's got a fantastic rapport with players like Podolski, and also, well, this is the guy who brought the likes of Podolski and Patrick Helmers through the Cologne ranks. So he's someone who can shape something in Cologne, and I think he's got the respect of the players. And now he's had the Christmas break to talk to them and really put his point of view across. I think things are looking up under a inexperienced at the top level coach, but certainly not lacking an understanding and knowledge of the club and German football in general.
And we've spoken obviously there about Lukas Podolski. He's really taking to the captain's role. I see that he's becoming a more mature player now at Cologne under Schaefer. He's been given the responsibility. He also has a few more pieces in the puzzle that we saw against Werder Bremen. They were excellent going down the left with Eret and Clemens. Really did a great job for Cologne. And that, in turn, made it easier for Lukas Podolski to get the goals, because he wasn't trying to create them all himself. He was the outlet at the end of the process. So this may be a bit of a turning point for a player who has great qualities that we've seen for the German national side, that may actually be able to translate that into a bit of club form.
Absolutely. Well, I think he has to be a bit of a different player for Cologne. He's got these fantastic players like Özil, Müller, and closer around him at international level, and that is always going to create chances. Chances are always going to arise in a side like that, as England found out to their dismay in the summer. At Cologne, he hasn't got world class players around him. He's got a decent, hard working team though. And as you mentioned, with the left, he himself is a player who drifts over to the left, even plays on the left side of midfield sometime. And I think if he can continue to link up with Clemens and Eret like he did against Bremen the other day, then certainly that could be a positive sign for Cologne. We saw it was Eret that created the first goal for him in the rout of Bremen. And I think it was, if I remember rightly, it was Clemens who created the second, both crosses from the left. And Podolski, as captain under Schaefer, it's the kind of situation you want at a club. He's a local boy. Schaefer's a local coach, and I think that gives a club some kind of identity, at least if you have someone from the area who loves the club with all their heart, as Podolski does. And you know, he left a Champions League finalist in Bayern Munich. Okay, they weren't Champions League finalists at the time, but you know, a major European force where he didn't quite make his name as he would have liked. But he's returned home to a real fanfare. Didn't really hit it off last season. I think that was just teething problems coming back into a side where the quality wasn't quite as good. He's not going to get the same amount of chances he would have had, as we've already mentioned, with Germany, but certainly with Bayern as well. But now Podolski with the captaincy, he'll mature. He said himself he's enjoying the role. And I think with that added responsibility, will come better performances. And you mentioned that he's not trying to create things just by himself. He's not a one-man team, as was often the case, or at least it seemed the case. He didn't really get very far earlier in the season, but there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But now, as you say, with the likes of Clemens and Eret flying down the left and providing that kind of service, then it can only be good for Podolski if he can concentrate on his finishing and not have to create and hit shots from 50 yards as he has done in the past.
Well, it seems that there are better times ahead then for Cologne, we can only hope. Andy, that was a superb insight into the club. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully you can make another appearance on the show in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Very much enjoyed it.
In the meantime, I suppose there's only one thing to do, and that's to say, Terry, over to you.
Thanks, John. On to our next guest. Last Saturday, I was at Socrates Lewis, which is a football bloggers' meetup, at Lewis FC for their match against Staines Town. Also attending was top Bundesliga blogger Tim Hill, who writes for his own blog, plus the very splendid In Bed with Maradona. Tim has a keen brain for football tactics, so we decided to have a chat at half-time about the setup of two of the Bundesliga's great rivals, Schalke and Borussia Dortmund. Before we listen to the conversation, I should just point out that it was recorded in the Rook Inn at Lewis Football Club, and it gets a bit noisy in the background. So we're going to talk about Borussia Dortmund and Schalke, and we're going to start with Borussia Dortmund. Obviously the two clubs are big rivals, one's doing extremely well, the other one's doing terribly, so it's a nice contrast. So let's talk about Dortmund first. Let's start with just the way that they lay themselves out, Tim. Why don't we talk to you a little bit about how you see that?
Right, usually they set up in a kind of 4-2-3-1, quite a narrow kind of style. Mm-hmm. Both Götze and Ross Kreutz, they're very, very narrow, and they don't look to really kind of hug the touchline, which you see in perhaps other kind of variations of 4-2-3-1. However, Klopp is quite good at being quite flexible. Quite often when he wants to pack the midfield, like against teams like Mainz, he brings a player back into a central kind of deeper three. So it shows that they're very flexible. However, I'd say the core component of the way they play is very much a 4-2-3-1, which is extremely direct, quick. They play a very high line and very much a high pressing game, which is wonderful to see. And it's very, very well oiled. They all know what they're doing. It's a great team, actually.
Mm. Looking at some specific players, Kagawa is a player who arrived famously from a Japanese second division side, although it's worth pointing out that they were a promoted Japanese second division side, and he actually scored more than a couple of goals in the A-League before he arrived. And he's gone down an absolute storm. He's away at the Asian Cup at the moment. What are they missing when he's not there?
His vision is actually very, very good. His before the ball comes to him, he can easily hit a one-touch pass through ball. I remember when he moves wide, brings out defenders with him, and he can just turn and with his left foot do an in-swinging ball over the top, and that happens quite a lot. It's surprising. That's one thing they really miss, a way of just giving the ball to him and he can instantly take the ball over the top, which is something that Götze and Kroos really can't do.
So you mentioned those two guys. The early indication seems to be, well, we're recording this, Dortmund are still playing, so we're not quite certain. We haven't seen them, but certainly against Leverkusen, Dortmund sort of used Grosskreutz and Götze, the way I saw it, as standing in for Kagawa almost as two players in one. Would that be fair, or how do you see that they that?
Yeah, it's kind of different without Kagawa to really pull the strings. That they're very different players. Grosskreutz isn't as technical as Götze, and Götze is very different to Kagawa. He's very fast and he's got terrific feet, but he hasn't got the passing range, so they've kind of had to alter how they use the centre forward. He needs to drop further forward, whilst if that was Kagawa, he would be in that space. So Barrios or Lewandowski, they're the people who need to drop back.
Well,
Well, it's on those two strikers that I wanted to move on to, with Barrios and Lewandowski. Lewandowski getting the nod over Barrios in the last game. I'm not quite. Again, we don't know what formation they played here. I mean, how do you see? How do you see those two working out over the course of the season? Do you think that they'll alternate the two? Could you foresee a situation where they'll play together in the same team, or do you think that it'll be Barrios or Lewandowski?
Yeah, I think it's got to be one or the other. But the fact is, they're so successful at the moment that I don't think they're doing that, and they're both extremely good at dropping deep, and they don't mind perhaps not scoring the amount of goals that a central forward traditionally does. But their way they link together for the collective is wonderful, and it's great to see such a well-oiled team based around selfless, hard-working players who know their role in the team.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder whether or not you'll ever see that team play as well together as they are at the moment.
I think, just slightly going off topic here, along with Villarreal and Dortmund and Barcelona and possibly Arsenal, actually, Dortmund, Villarreal are superb teams to watch, and a great, possibly understated team. Those two teams as a collective are wonderful to watch, which is, I think, it's quite often overlooked how well a team and a manager particularly has created an organic kind of development within a team. Both in Dortmund and Villarreal, that's kind of really seen this season. It's really nice to see.
Well, interestingly, talking about sort of like unsung teams, so to speak, there's one element of that Dortmund team that I, the one guy I want to talk about before we finish with Dortmund, and that's Sven Bender in the midfield there. I think he's made a significant contribution to the team without necessarily getting the same plaudits, because he's not that kind of attacking player, or he's not so obviously defensive, say like Hummels and Subotic. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the way you see him playing?
I think his relationship with Sahin is very, very good. He understands when Sahin gets forward, he's going to leave a lot of space for them to move into. So he doesn't traditionally look to press in the same way the rest of the team does. He's the one who has a great vision of what's going on. He can read the game with the ball coming through the middle. The same way that Busquets for Barcelona is often overlooked as being an important component. I think without him, they'd really struggle to play the pressing game, and they get found out quite a bit. Because I know Subotic he's not the paciest compared to Hummels. So it's important that someone can read the game and really offer him protection. Otherwise, their defence, which is fantastic, it's really, really good. And especially when playing a high game, you need someone who can read the game before it actually happens. I think he's an integral part of this team.
Thank you for that. Well, what we'll do is we'll have a quick chat about Schalke, and let's start again as we did with Dortmund. And let's just try and give us an indication of your reading of the way that they're playing. Obviously a very, very different scenario to Dortmund at the moment.
Well, their form wasn't that bad. They won the last four in the league, and obviously they lost last week, and they play in a very, they kind of set up as a 4-4-2, but with Raul dropping back and Huntelaar as a main central striker who really doesn't move around into the channels at all. Recently they've been playing Edu out on the left. And Edu, I think he was signed as a centre forward, is not a good left winger at all. He's strong and got a good left foot, but he's not pacey. He has no idea when to move in field to let the fullback move on or things like that. And in fact, I was looking over recent games, and it's when Gerardo plays on the left and he cuts in field, that's when Schalke hit their good run of form. And I know in build especially they had a go at Magath for the signings of Huntelaar and Gerardo, saying that Huntelaar hasn't scored for a long time, Gerardo doesn't even play. Well, when Gerardo does play, it allows Schmitz, the left back, to get forward, and it allows a completely different dimension. So when they play Joel Matip at right back, he just launches diagonal balls which are aimless and pointless. So the addition of Gerardo allows the fullback to get forward, allows to be a lot more fluid and give a lot more attacking options than playing Edu on the left. And that's a massive problem.
The interesting thing about Edu assigned as a centre forward, of course they've got two very high profile centre forwards there, or strikers shall we say, there rather than centre forwards, but I mean, you've obviously got Raul, who's the legend there, and Huntelaar, who is made a reputation for being a goal machine in Europe. I mean, how do you see those two working out?
I know at the start of the season they often occupied the same space, and for a while they, from the games watched, they understood what to do when another one moved in a certain direction. However, there were still times where Raul and Huntelaar were occupying the same space. It very, very close, which makes them very easy to mark and very easy to plant. The good thing about Raul is that he's got terrific feet and he can find a good pass, but Huntelaar is not very fast. He's not very fast at all. And when the centre-backs are close together, you can't play a through ball. If Raul drops deep to play a through ball to Huntelaar, he can't get onto it. So there needs to be quite a wide gap to actually allow Huntelaar to actually read the run and get onto a through ball. So I don't think their partnership's well oiled at all at the moment, but they've been getting a lot better. I know Raul's consistently scores, and Huntelaar's going through a bit of a drought at the moment. But
let's wrap things up, Tim. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about the two centre halves, Metselma and Benedikt Havelis. Problematic pairing. I mean, Havelis, I've got a lot of time for. Metselma,
yeah, I agree.
I think was an ill-conceived signing, in my opinion. What do you think?
He is a massive liability. The amount of times he holds up his hands to Manuel Neuer after he saves his ass is astounding. Yeah. And I don't. He's very, very terrible. He's slow. He has a very poor reading. Even when the ball's going to bounce and when it gets to him, so much he's sticking out his thigh, hip.
He's kind of, because I mean, he came from Real Madrid, didn't he? But I mean, he hadn't been playing there, so he's going to be really rusty. You'd think, really ring rusty.
Well, I remember when he signed, I think it was Rafael Honigstein who said, "What? This is a stupid, bizarre signing."
Yeah.
Because he's not that good, and it was more down to his partnership. It was the World Cup, I think, that everyone thought he was a good defender, but he's not good at all. And even in the air, that's quite a tall, broad kind of guy. He doesn't command the ball in the air at all.
Yeah. So I mean, in general, then, I mean, the components, they've got mostly decent players, Schalke, haven't they? But they just haven't kind of worked out. I mean, perhaps. I mean, it's easy to be critical, but in fairness, they've had some big personnel changes, haven't they? So it could be fair to say that they've got some work to do. But do you think that they'll sort it out? I mean, the current form is decent.
Yeah, and obviously, apart from the loss last week, they're on a decent run of four wins, and they're third in the form chart over the past six games, which shows they are making progress.
Well, as we record this, they're 1-0 up at Hannover.
Yeah, well, that's a cracking result if that stays like
if
that.
If that happens, yeah.
I think they are making progress. I think they need to revert to putting Giraldo back in the team, because it's astounding. He makes a really big difference. It's really understated. He's got terrific feet, and he's very good at moving infield, and his relationship with Raul was very good, I thought. They knew when to find each other, and their interplay is something that is not seen when Edu plays, who I think he takes so long on the ball. It gives the teams and defences time to really become stable again. So I think just give it time. I think Magath just needs to find components which works in the system.
Give it time and more Giraldo.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect time to win. Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Not a problem.
See you around. Well, see you at the bar. That's where we're going right now.
Fantastic. Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Let's wrap up the podcast then with a quick look at the upcoming Bundesliga fixtures. No predictions this week, as I see no need for further humiliation. The evening game on Friday will be Bayer Leverkusen versus Hannover. Hannover they lost last weekend, but of course Mirko Slomka signed a contract, so that's great news for them. Werder Bremen were dreadful last weekend, and to make matters worse, they now have to play Bayern Munich. Wolfsburg will play Borussia Dortmund. An intriguing fixture there, just to see how Dortmund will recover from the minor setback from last weekend. Nuremberg are playing Hamburg. Schalke will play Hoffenheim. St. Pauli will play Cologne. Kaiserslautern and Mainz. That's a tough game, isn't it? Kaiserslautern have been on the end of some pretty bad defeats, and they're losing Lakic in the summer to Wolfsburg. Mainz need a win, don't they? Otherwise, things are going to go on the skids for them. Stuttgart will play Freiburg, and finally, the final game of the weekend will be on Sunday at 4:30, and that's Eintracht Frankfurt versus Borussia Mönchengladbach. So, there we have it. Our thanks to Andy James and Tim Hill for two fantastic contributions. More importantly, thanks to you for taking the time to include us in your podcast schedule. We'll be back next week with more guests and more John.